The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. The only this time. 4, 3, 2, 1. It's a goal. Right on the Tigers. Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion. Just down the bars.
Oh, gee whiz. Had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy. And Nick, I've been thinking in the lockdown, and someone posted a video on Twitter the other day, and it was a picture of, I believe it was 1993 or 1992, it was first game of the season, and it was a guy called Ty Esler, which is your Twitter handle, tapping down, and finished with a Terry Keyes, I believe it was a Nider kick to a Terry Keyes screamer, and then kicked a beautiful goal, and it got me thinking about cult heroes and the sort of Ty Esler and Terry Keyes, about the tantalising ones, the ones who had skills or the ones that you loved and never quite made it for whatever reason. And, you know, people who make football fun. And I thought, who better to bring on the pod to discuss it than, you know, I think it's fair to say Richmond's foremost video poster of retro Twitter posting, and that is Simon Moss. Simon, welcome to the pod.
Good afternoon, gents. How are we all, and listeners? I think Rhett Bartlett's making a bit of a late run, but
he's going. Rhett doesn't hold grudges the way you do, Simon.
Look, if I could just work out a way how I commercialise the republishing, packaging, editing, and promotion of, you know, obscure 1987 Richmond practice games, then I'll shut down my law firm straight away and get into it. But that video actually that I put up the other day, Andy, was from 1991. Actually, it was our first Foster's Cup game, which, you know, pre-season, especially in Premier's land, yeah, you can take or leave, and yeah, sometimes tune in 10 seconds before the bounce. But that was our first hit out on telly, certainly since, you know, the Save Our Skins campaign had been successful. We'd recruited someone, ironically, Collingwood, would you believe, Terry Keyes, and, you know, that he took that hanger and then booted it through from 55 was, I don't know whether I'm recalling or reconstructing that moment in my mind, but I'm pretty sure I was off the chair in any event. And now you look back on those, and yeah, you know, we're premiers, and aren't that great? But wins did mean more then, and I don't think it's just nostalgia speaking. They were rarer and they were more coveted. And what made 2019 so good for me was, that we got back to enjoying it and loving it.
Yeah, look. I mean, I'm just old enough to remember the Save Our Skins campaign, and, you know, there was a lot of talk that we might lose our club, and Neville Crowe coming into the cheer squad, I remember that very well. I think Nick and I were there that day.
Going to the Legends game at Windy Hill.
Yeah, like, these are we all know it, but we were sailing a lot closer to the wind than we are these days, where we're the sort of predominant fighting with Collingwood to be the biggest club in the land. There was a rawness and an edge to those days.
So we had the idea, you know, talking about our favourite sort of cult heroes. So, I mean, obviously, if anyone's listening to this podcast, they've probably got Richo as a hero. So, you know, we wanted to pay tribute more to the, you know, the players who we loved in spite of their flaws or, you know, lack of talent. So what did we agree on? No All-Australians, no best and fairests, less than 150 games?
Less than 150 games for Richmond.
Yes,
for Richmond.
Yep.
for instance, which ruled out Shane Tuck.
Yes. Can I just say how disappointed I am at that it rules out Michael Mitchell, who was twice All-Australian for Claremont, but never for Richmond. So, yeah, he would have been high on my list.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because, you know, cult hero, it's a bit of it's a malleable term, sometimes loosely used. You know, I actually went to a dictionary and came up with a writer, musician, artist, or other public figure who's greatly admired by a relatively small audience or who is influential despite limited commercial success, which sounds a really good descriptor on iTunes for this podcast. but also covers all but about 35 Richmond players since 1982. For me, a cult hero, there are some characteristics that need to be satisfied. There's got to be commitment, not just, and I think that goes beyond loyalty, because, you know, players are players for a short period of time, and if they get, you know, good offers, they should entertain them. But you need to feel that you need to feel a connection to them, and that you need to believe that they bleed as you bleed.
Yes.
For the jumper, and if their pay went to $10 a game, they would still be there, and they would still be desperate to win. And then the other one is the, you know, as you mentioned, Nick, the flawed genius, and obviously Richo leaps to mind. I wonder what Richo is doing these days. You don't hear much about him, maybe the official AFL account should do a couple of tweets about him from time to time. But anyway, the one that the shooting star, the one that has a moment and then that is fleeting, but has great significance for fans, and then he's gone.
Yeah, and like it's interesting you talk about that, Simon, because you know I think you're one of the you're one of a small group of people who would stand in the middle of a crowded pub and take on all comers that Joel Bowden was a magnificently good AFL footballer.
I thought that the cult hero sort of guy that the player that you're talking about is the sort that if you overheard a conversation anywhere, whether it be in a workplace environment, on a tram, in a pub, that was focused around or had just got to the point at which that player was dissed, you would find yourself compelled to insert yourself into that conversation and say, listen here, guys, you better know how to either debate or you better know how to fight, because I will not have that said about this person and I take it personally. So, yeah.
I like it. All right.
Good criteria. I think my first one meets that criteria. Grandson of a Richmond player, brother of a Richmond player, maybe the most famous individual act that, if you Google his name, comes up is kicking the ball the wrong way in a preliminary final. But Butch Gale's my first one, and wow. I'm not sure how much more I need to say than that. He was like, when you talk about the club meant more to him than just a jumper and a salary, like. There's a great interview of him speaking about what it meant to play with his brother, you know, rejuvenate a career that was looking pretty shaky in his last few years at Fitzroy, had a really good final series, brain fart notwithstanding, but yeah, I loved him.
Yeah, and the thing about him, he came to the club just as it was the first decent team of my lifetime. You know, it wasn't a coincidence. He came at the same time as Bodders, but, we're starting to get good. We were solidly a middle or above average or above average team from basically the moment that Butch arrived. And he was lovable. I'll never forget the day Stephen Alessio broke his shoulder and trash-talked him while he was lying on the ground. Helped my dislike of Essendon for years to come, but fantastic fun, and you always knew where he was on the field thanks to that magnificent ponytail.
Some of the largest calves you'll ever see on a human as well. I didn't consider him, I must say, but yeah, I certainly have fond memories and in that number, probably one of the better ones to play and have the most luck with injury for some time.
All right, Simon, do you want to give us your first?
Yeah, look, I went, knowing here that we go back to 1982, I didn't want to, I maybe went anti-recency bias, but I did go back to that particular time, and even though I was pretty young at the time, I've spoken to a lot of people who were in and around or just watching the club at the, in the early 80s, and Peter Welsh is someone who I've decided to insert as my number five. I suspect we'll have a discussion about someone whose story is somewhat similar to Woosh's later in the pod. But he was, back when reserves were really reserves, he was on the bench for the last reserves game in 1980. And yes, I know this predates 1982, but he did play afterwards, so it's all part of his story. So, and then TJ, in his wisdom, decided that we just needed a little bit of a lift around the rucks, and an enormously popular chap, which typically means they're riotously good fun in the pub. But and that may well be true, but certainly the way in which he attacked the ball and often the holder of it, I believe he had a picture of him with a holding Ronnie Wearmouth's hair and pulling him along in his boardroom, sadly taken far too soon. But, yeah, Peter Welsh, even though he didn't play many games, coming through and then being one of our very best in that 1980 final series and going on to be have an almost iconic status, certainly amongst those who played with him, I think he warrants a spot.
Nice one.
Good choice.
Now, I wanted to come in hot with someone that I think would be on a lot of people's top five, and that's Jakey King. And look, I could just say punch Alan Dydak, mic drop, stop. There was also that. Like, I just wanted to help you remember his career a little bit, which I'm sure this that you two esteemed gentlemen already know, but you know, just to revel in it one more time. Came from our reserves, the Coburg reserves team, good in a northern suburbs boy, lad, where he made lifelong friends and connections that have helped him in his business career. Was a second round pick in the 2006 rookie draft. Might recall was a Ford Pocket and actually played 19 games in 07. You may also remember that he started to get torched a bit as a back pocket. And was known a bit for turning it over, and then he played less games in 08 and 09, and he played less games each season. And then Dimmer came in and turned him into a forward pocket. And then in 2011 and 13, he had more than he sort of played high teens games and had more than 20 goals. And, you know, quite quickly, soon after that, injuries overtook him and ended his career. But, my God, he was a lot of fun. And, you know, you've heard me tell this story before, but I'll never forget... I was at Coburg one day watching a game, and Jakey was in the ones by the stage, but he turned up to watch in his motorcycle. I think it was a pre-season game, and somehow he was allowed to park right on the edge of the edge of the ground, and the motorcycle was a souped-up Harley that was so noisy that every single person in the ground and three suburbs over knew that Jakey King was in the house. And I thought it was a very Triple H entering WrestleMania. He was a personality outsized. His impact on Richmond's personnel, on Richmond's spirit, was outside his actual on-field production. But he was quite the personality.
I think I think Alan Dydak's still looking for his keys too, in the courtesy of a little tickle that Jake may have given him. Late in 2008, under, I think that would have been under Jade Rawling, but yeah, he was an impish man early, and you know, I was far from the first to gravitate towards him, but yeah, having had a tiny bit to do with him, regard him in the highest of esteem, certainly for his off-field work, which is largely unheralded, and comes across as a man of honest intentions, if not always deeds, and similarly again is adored on either side of the fence.
The story of the often told story of him wrestling Richo in the down at Brighton or Sandringham in the beach, that actually checks out to me. He's a pretty strong looking dude.
Yeah, good power to weight. And Richo probably relied on his athleticism too much as a wrestler.
So, I was actually, Michael Gale actually set me off on a thread. I was trying to think, for all the stuff about Hawthorn being the family club, I count at least five sets of brothers that we had at Richmond in the late 80s and 90s, oh, and early 2000s, between Bowers, Pickerings, Kellaways, Bowdens, Gales. Were the Ryans related to each other?
Yeah, absolutely. Brothers.
Yeah, so there you go. Seven. Oh, six, sorry. But on that list, I really struggled between Brendan and Nathan Bauer, because I kind of loved them both. They were different players, but probably Nathan was the better player as the wingman and a very sort of Camden McIntosh before his time kind of way, like probably better defensive player than he was offensive. He did some very good work against Peter Matera, played some genuinely good football again when we were becoming a good team. It wasn't just that we had Knights and Campbell and Richo. It was guys like Nathan Bowers as well.
When we were up and about, he was a PE teacher, and in the week that. In any week where we were coming up to playing West Coast, he'd be that excited about coming up against Matera that he'd just say, look, just have a kick, boys. And because I am that excited, I'm really looking forward to getting to the footy. And I think there was a Darren Bauer as well.
Brendan. I think Darren was the oldest. Brendan second and Nathan.
I think Brendan was on Ablett Senior the day that he kicked 14, and after the game, KB was asked if he thought about moving him, and he said, oh, no, we'll learn from that, and promptly sacked him at the end of the year. But anyway, a good memory. my next one is cult heroes can be good, yeah? And so I'll give you a bit of a clue. And this moment that he had, which was far from his only one at Richmond, I would say would be on the podium of the ones that most of us would first think of when thinking of well over a decade of our Richmond experience from the early 90s to the start of the next century. And
this kick is a beauty. Gets O'Donnell. He was going to play on the Mercedes, called to play on. Chips it to Long. Bond comes in. Does it magnificently. Elliot couldn't control it. Dundas's little gift to Bond. Here's a go. Bond to Maxfield. Go and kick the goal, Stewie. Straighten him up.
Go, Stewie!
Weren't that lifted off the ground?
You could actually make a case for that video being supportive of the nomination of Chris Bond, but I've gone for Stuart Maxfield here, number 27, flowing mane, again enormous calves. I remember watching the game out of Skinner Reserve, and you were so close to the players there, and he just missed taking possession of a loose ball, and came running into the crowd, and was about 2 centimetres away from me, and you thought, you're an enormous man. And apparently was very good with his fists, liked a bourbon, but a raking left foot kick, and again, hard at the ball, at the man, and a big part of some of our best memories as Tiger fans, certainly up to that point of my life.
One thing I liked about Stewie was he just, the thing, when he chased, he had the Daniel Rioli category quality of, he chased really hard with his head down, and you could see him like a hit-seeking missile running someone down in the middle of the MCG. And yeah, I used to love, like, it was the first pressure player I really enjoyed. And I was actually surprised when I looked up his stats recently. In his sort of 94-95, which was his key years, he only averaged 12 disposals, about a goal a game, and only two tackles, because I always remember his tackles as being sort of some of the most exciting things about watching Richmond. But yeah, I love Stewie. And maybe that's it's a nice transition for me. I was sort of doing research for this. I looked up, the first number I ever wore was on my jersey, was 19, Peter Willow Wilson. And I was sort of like, you forget why you like someone, and because, you know, you're a kid, and what more do you know? And I was watching a game from 1988 where we rolled Carlton in a big upset, he was sort of, he ran back with a flight of the ball, he contested, contested a goal again, he created a ball up, the commentator said, Wilson, he's got bad skills, but you can't question his endeavour. And he had blood running down the side of his face. He had the famous handstand after we beat Carlton in that game. And he actually, like, he had 54 games and 39 goals for us. He wasn't a spud off the wing. You know, had a 20 average 20 possessions a game one year. Like, he was a decent player. And, you know, hard as nails, and you know, wound up winning a premiership, I believe, for West Coast. Or did he?
Yeah.
Did he just miss out?
Yeah. Thought he did.
Yeah.
Their first one.
Anyway, yeah, pretty sure.
And turns out, I bonded with someone on my football team who shared a similar love for Willow Wilson, who's about my age. So, you know, obviously, there was something to him as a cult hero.
Well, my next one, I almost feel a bit cheap because it's so obvious, but I just thought I'd feel bad if we didn't do it. But, you know, there was a whole series of either undersized or under-talented key defenders from the late 80s or early 90s that I could have chosen. Brian Lees, Michael Laffey, Paul Bullis, but none of those people won a final, while both through kicking goals and taking souls. And so I give you Scott Turner, 144 games of not quite glory, but certainly heart and effort.
Yeah, and the thing was, he just, so Scotty was on my list too. The thing was, how many games do you reckon he played in 96 after his 1995 triumph where he almost single-handedly won the final and played 22 games and was still in the background? The next year, we're coming off a final. How many games do you think he played in the next two seasons combined?
So under Walls.
Yeah.
I'll say 30? Yeah, I mean, you must be bringing it up because it's low.
It's 18. So he averaged nine games for 2 years, for the 2 years after 95. He never recaptured that magic. But look, I think one of the many special memories from 2017 that many people will hold, I'm sure Scotty was there, and I'm sure his memory of meeting me at the bar and having a selfie taken will be something he'll always hold on to.
Yeah, it's a dream.
I got fond memories of driving over, not so much of driving back from Adelaide in 2014, and I think Scotty was running for Parliament at that point, and you saw Richmond fans on the side of the road posing for their photo with the Scott Turner sign or painted mural or what have you. And he was standing Dunstall when he kicked 17. And well done, Scotty, ran him up the ground in the last 2 minutes of that game. And then stood him the following year and kept him goalless. So I think if we revert to the criteria of someone who got everything out of themselves, remember he was at Melbourne initially, I think, and came without much fanfare, I think he could be pretty comfortable. And he was the last player ever to play on Gary Ablett in AFL or the FL. So there you go. In a reserves game.
He was a mid-season draft pick, so it's hard to
here
be.
There we go.
Marlon Pickett aside, it's hard to get more obscure than that.
Yeah.
I do have to say, if you watch the highlights of those Dunstall, that Dunstall 17-goal game, and, you know, just the goals quickly interspersed, like, he's almost on a different opponent every time. And I swear at about the 12th goal, Tiger Stripes Dyer is trying to stand on him. it's an interesting who's who of Richmond in the 80s, that montage of Dunstall goals.
John Manton get a go, maybe? I think I'm up, but I'll stay with the era. And look, didn't we need our heroes in the late 80s and early 90s? We'd get routinely spanked. Yeah, we were often hopelessly impecunious. We almost folded, and, you know, the players who just left it all out there were magnetic, and generally wins meant more. I want to bring up a bloke by the name of Andy Goodwin, who only played with us from 87 to 91. So, almost all of KB's years plus one. I was surprised when I looked him up, and I went to two sources, Wiki and AFL tables. So, that's it. Andy Goodwin was just 188 centimetres. Now, my memories of him are 10 centimetres taller than that, and perhaps that's how he played. Yeah, sometimes in the ruck, key position, or even wing. And yes, he'd fall over, he'd bump into his own players, but you always knew he was going at full whistle. And it felt like he was doing it for you in some pretty rough times. He was English born and went to a wedding at the Wandon Footy Club as an 18-year-old, got chatting with the president, who said, "You look like a strapping unit." And he said, "I've only ever played soccer or union. Come down and have a go." Kicked four goals in a practice match and made his way to Richmond and only played 70-odd games, I think, and then went to Melbourne and was serviceable. Do like that he once went up to an umpire too and said, after a ridiculous decision, and said, "Excuse me, can I be a reporter for what I'm thinking?" The umpire responded, "No." And Scotty responded, "Well, I think you're a..." I don't want to stuff your ratings there, but yeah, you can fill in the dots. But yeah, I loved Andy, number 24, good number too, solid number.
Good choice. His son's enforcer ruckman for Coburg for quite some years.
I'm astonished. Yeah. Mm. And just one last, have a guess how many times when he retired at the age of 39, how many times he had his nose broken in a game of football? 22. 22. It was a reasonable beak, but still, you've got to be putting it out there a fair bit to...
That's a boxer's number.
Yeah.
Andy?
Yeah, well, we have, at some stage I'm going to have to skip because we've doubled one of mine, but I want to pay tribute to one of our finest ever picks in the preseason draft, which was Birdman Evans, who played in a reserves premiership for Melbourne in 1993. Then was out of the AFL for multiple years and then came back in 97, the PSD. And then between 97 and 2000, a glorious era, he played 28 games, averaging 10 disposals and one goal. But was always there in the reserves, pushing for a spot, giving us hope. Always ones that you just think, but it is really the epitome of the kind of mediocre journeymen that play on bad teams that are desperate for just that extra little bit to get them over the hump. Was good fun, could take a hanger, and was always for reserves watchers was always dear to our hearts.
No, another player who I remember is not being afraid of the tough stuff either.
No, and speaking of people who like a drink, clearly he played in five, after he left the AFL, he played for five flags in the Mornington Peninsula, which is a pretty good sign. If you're an AFL-level athlete and you play five flags for the one team afterwards, it's probably a sign that you know, you like to get on it, you like the lads, you're one of them, you know, you're not a mercenary, you're just, you're there and you're part of the team and you enjoy the atmosphere. So, obviously, quite good team man, probably good on pre-season trips, and will forever be remembered by Richmond fans for a cracking nickname as well.
Could kick a big ball. Yeah, Chief was a big fan of him. But,
All right. Well, my next one, it's a somewhat biased choice because he was the first guest we ever had on the show years ago. But Ray Hall, very as innocuous a start to his AFL career could be for late draft pick from the Central Coast of New South Wales, where apparently he didn't play 18-on-18 football until he was well into his teens. But his first game was notable for the scoreboard catching on fire rather than him having any disposals. Didn't play any games the year after, so you'd think, oh, it's on a knife edge. But from there, plays 99 games for the club, kicks 28 goals, which is more than I remember, but was a good athlete, ran up and down the ground, and another of these guys who sort of just gave everything and left it all out on the field. And a nice bloke.
And good too. I found myself, I can't even remember why, but I was in the State Library and I had to look at microfiche. Yeah, this is going back a few years. And of course, when you're doing that, it was for a professional reason. But of course, you wander over to old Herald commentaries or what have you of football games. And sure enough, I had a look in there of some write-ups of Ray Hall and performance after the 2001 final.
Of course you did. It'd be irrational not to.
Indeed. Yeah, I was there for 3 hours and didn't charge the client, of course. But he was really talked up, and my memories of him in that game was that he really did a number on Camporeale, and was talked about leading into the following week against Brisbane as being someone who would have a job of significance to do. I remember he got put on James Hurd one night, which didn't work out as well, but run like the wind. And he had some decent mitts on him, and I think just short of 100 games.
99 games,
yeah.
So, true story, I'm drinking buddies with the guy who was on his under-18s junior team who thinks he was the one. You know, there's always one person who says, I was better than X bloke who actually made the AFL.
Ah.
I know the guy who was the guy who thinks he's better than Ray Hall who never made the AFL, I'm mates with him, so,
Wow. Well, let's get him on.
Brakes of St. Kilda wouldn't be welcome.
I'd be a bit surprised if this guy isn't on all of our lists, but, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. But I'll read out this tweet that Cam Rose put out after this guy was let go by us. For many Tigers, Jacob Townsend is the symbol of 2017. A completely unexpected player and a completely unexpected flag. He means so much to all of us. It's almost beyond comprehension how much we love him. Such a special player in such a special time. Go Tigers. It's the criteria there. Hardness, arguably limited talent, maximum effort, an absolute shooting star of a run, and how much would you like to buy him lunch? Whether it be coming from a rugby league background where he's, from all reports, his dad looked somewhat down at Aussie rules, and coming through the Giants, not having a particularly auspicious time with them there, and frankly hadn't had so with us until that game in Freo. An astonishing run. He was legitimately a big part of every finals win that we had. I'll never forget him.
13 tackles in that final series, and as important as his complete inability to miss any shots at goal from him.
and the other thing is the iconic moments. my timeline is pretty skewed towards avid Richmond followers, deliberately so. But him laying down some hurt on the Crouch brothers, you know, coming into half time of the grand final, it doesn't just make a good moment. Those are one of one of the many things that put together that day. But that was a big one. You know, that tackle was, we are in this, we are here, we are not going away, and this is our house.
And yes, well said. And my favourite Jacob Townsend stat is, and like the thing about cult heroes is the sort of part of them. A cult hero is not someone who had a lot of talent who didn't make it. That's a different type of that's the unfulfilled dreams person. He is the old, like, you knew it wasn't going to last. Like, you knew it was just this beautiful run of magic, and it lasted exactly one game enough. Like, even in his grand final, the goal kicking was on. Mm-hmm. And my favourite stat, which Nick, I know you've appreciated before, is that before 2017, Jacob Townsend had kicked 4 goals, 7 in the AFL, and then he kicked 16 goals, 2 during 2017. It was just the all-time comet streaking through the air. And you know, you better be outside to see it, because it's not coming back for 1,000 years.
The summer romance, and you just have to get on that flight and spend the rest of your life wondering whether you should have.
And the worst thing is, you'll see him later, because we're going to see him now. We're going to see him married with his children in with Essendon. And
but he was always his best with us.
He was. We definitely got the best out of him. And the Essendon supporters will never appreciate him like we did.
No chance whatsoever. No chance. He could win 5 BNFs, and those they're some of the worst people in the world, Essendon supporters. But he could play a bad quarter, and he'd be out the door. No one will ever love Jacob like we love him.
Can I just take on a little tangent there on Essendon? I know we've got to wrap this podcast up, but a friend of mine is a mad Tiger supporter. His grandfather, great uncle, played for Richmond, George Schmieden, actually. And Damien, if you're listening, shout out. But he had lived in Canberra his whole life, and he moved to Melbourne as an 18-year-old. But he'd always loved his footy, but he didn't sort of get what Melbourne supporters are like in Melbourne, and he always sort of liked James Hurt, because he was an Ainslie boy, so never had anything against Essendon. He's got some good mates for Essendon supporters, and he came to he lived in Melbourne for 2 years, and we were catching up in the pub after he'd been in Melbourne 2 years, and the number one thing he wanted to talk about was, I just never realised what wankers Essendon supporters are. And he just went on and on about it, because of this person who gets football but didn't sort of get the cultural things of what supporters of certain Melbourne clubs are like in their natural environment, because everyone's better behaved outside their football ghettos. Anyway, all right. So my player is actually one of my favourite people to talk about on this podcast, which was, you know, he reminds me of the American football player called Johnny Manziel, who came out of, was a legend in Texas high school football, and then won some very improbable games for Texas A&M. It was a guy not drafted as a junior, went back to the, because he was apparently a bit fat and lazy, went back to the bush, kicked 70 goals out of the midfield, and then 100 goals playing for Deniliquin, then fought his way back to the VFL, and then fought his way back onto an AFL list with Richmond, and then, has been a very solid pro, averaging, has played 80 games, averaged over a goal a game, 14 disposals. A solid half forward flanker type with good skills, but he gave us the only good moment of the 2016 and fulfilled every childhood dream of a Richmond supporter to kick the winning goal after the siren, and that's the legend of Sammy Lloyd.
Mm. Yeah, good choice.
Absolutely. And it's so important that he kicked that goal with us being 5 points down too, because that was always the fantasy. Yeah, the result and the significance of the kick would have been identical if we'd been 2 or 3 or 4, but it was always 5 points, and you were always around about that distance. Occasionally, 80 metres, but when you're in dreamland, but 45, 50 was about the range, and had a great view of it that night.
Difficult shot too.
And he'd been kicking them like puddings all night, but
What did you think of the way? I liked the way he celebrated. Like, is that in your in your imagination? Is that how you celebrate the winning goal?
I think I'm on the move. I think I'm on the move. There's, you know, there's some form of, you know, salute.
Airplane.
I'm thinking pistol fingers a big part of it.
I'm thinking Premier League style, running along the punt road end with, like, pointing to the crowd.
I think at various stages of my life I've choreographed, you know, a 40 to 50 second routine that I would choose to implement in a situation like this. But I think Sammy's response, where it enables everyone to come to him, he's clearly joyous, but he's not, you know, self-absorbed. I think he nailed the dismount.
Yeah, can I just say that the ultimate would be going to the umpire, grabbing his effects microphone, and then addressing the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be very professional wrestling. my last one. There were a few on this list of, like, what would these guys have been like if they'd got to play in a more functional club? And, you know, and if things had gone a bit better for them. But David Roden, for me, like, he came, you know, insanely jacked, you know, 173 centimetres and 87 kilos, which is crazy. Plays every game his first 2 years as a teenager, kicks 35 goals. But I think we remember him as much for Richo yelling at him. For some mistake, you know, he has a really bad knee injury. The club doesn't support him to make it back. And Sugar Johnson announces that he's been delisted in his speech, in his captain's speech at the BNF. We were a rabble, and I'm glad he played more than 100 games at two other clubs because he deserved it.
Well, we needed to get something out of the 2001 draft, out of which we traded. Yeah. And he was our first selection, I think, in early 30s. Yeah. And shortly afterwards, you know, it was Mitchell and Montagna. And anyway, I'm over it. We won two flags. But, he really got the terraces moving. And my wife was a massive fan and always come across as a ripping bloke.
And fills out a goal umpire's uniform probably better than most goal umpires do.
Pretty jacked.
All right, now just before we go, sorry, Sam, what were you going to say?
I've got my number one.
Oh, okay.
I contacted the club in June 2011 to say I wanted to sponsor this bloke, which was odd, as he didn't play for Richmond at the time. He came, I sponsored him, and I got to know him a bit. He's genuinely an angelic man who, you know, he loves to lift, so you guys would love him for that. Prided his work rate. His last quarters were often his best. He knew he ached and hurt as you did. He wasn't up there on the dais in 2017, but I reckon his fingerprints are all over this flag. And I'll play you what I think is certainly my favourite goal of his.
This season is alive. Griffiths with a high ball. He's got huge heart, big lungs, and that was a big mark.
Great.
And he's going to love this.
Nice commentary by Bruce.
Yeah. Why is it time to the standards were right there right now?
What you do about standards, Mac, is you set them, and that's what he's decided to do, and he has done this last month or two.
It'll be fitting if he can dob the goal. And the Tigers win six straight, and Mary Tyson for more.
Well, it's like he saw the video of that game beforehand. But yeah, I adore Devon, and culture gets thrown around a fair bit. But I think he had a huge influence on us.
Yeah, and in a sort of I hate to bring this up, but in a sort of Charge of the Light Brigade style act of sheer bravery in desperate circumstances, The way he celebrated that goal in the Carlton final, where we were obviously cooked, but he was just trying to inspire the team, you know, by through his force of will. Like, it was almost like he was picking 18 blokes up and trying to carry them all over the finish line. It was pretty special.
And I felt like he was trying to convince me as well, because I was of the same
view. Yeah, we were so flat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't play that goal as well, because, yeah, we looked at each other and we go, awesome, come on, now we might lose by less. What a man, and I hope he can record a GPS at some point, because or some children's books or something like that.
I do like that the last thing that he did as a, so his last year was 2017, and that when they went into the rooms afterwards and they got the whole team together, they wouldn't start the song until they got Ivy into the circle.
Love is a big word, but I adore that man. Yeah.
And let us not forget, it's he got his cousin down to the club. We didn't get my beloved Soldo without Ivy's personal touch, sort of taught him everything he knew. Must be sort of fun for Ivan to not only to teach his cousin, but like his cousin's taller and a better leap than he was. Like it sort of must be. And by the way, you can see, like, I know he's not perfect and I overrate him, but he's very solid fundamentally. Soldo, you know, he rarely makes mistakes. He's clearly he plays within himself. He's clearly been very well coached.
Well, I think you often see that in players that have been taught when they have the mental aptitude to receive lessons and follow them and carry them out. Yeah, you know, he can get into bad habits as a kid, but if you're bordering on adulthood and you're told by someone you respect, this is what you do, then you have a greater ability to put that into action. And incidentally, I don't want to get carried away, but I'd have Ivy in that Richmond team of the 21st century ahead of Nank. But as much as we all love Nank, and I think there's a good argument for Troy Simmons as well. But that's another pot.
No, and it's I do agree with, like, both Ivy and Troy had near all Australian seasons. And well, you know, we love Nank, but he never reached quite that level.
Well, if we're talking about Ruckman, and I think, the cycle is complete on this show. Thanks very much, Simon. Slightly different circumstances the last time we had you on, but a pleasure as always.
Oh, it was good. I was delighted they got my memo, and it's been a hell of a run. And I missed the game, especially since the weather's turned, but... I miss some fresh content, even, you know, Essendon coughing up an easy one or something like that. Yeah, I could really go one of those this afternoon, but it's good to be the king.
Yeah, and it seems to be creeping closer.
Yeah, yeah.
Good one. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
I'm Simon.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal, right on the siren.
Soldo to pick it.
Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks.
Oh, she is. He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big Ivan takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh? Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yeah. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is the play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. That champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals you can make the case for being best on ground.
We never weep until the pile of sirens gone. Like the tiger of old, the strong and ribald, for we're from Tiger. Yellow and black, we're from Tigerland.
And I think they were a better team last year than they are now.